Namaste. On the occasion of 29th March, which is the anniversary of the mother's first coming to India, Pondicherry, of course we have shared many thoughts about it. One of them is that it was a sign that the divine Shakti moved to India. Because if we really look at the mother's birth and early education in France, France was the hub of the just the age which preceded us, the age of Renaissance, so-called Renaissance, Enlightenment. So we see France was the intellectual and creative hub of Europe, just like Greece was in far back times. So she was born there. She needed a special kind of education. She grew up. And then she comes to India. So if you look at it from the purely symbol point of view, the divine Shakti has moved to India. And that is of great significance. It would also mean that in future there would be much stronger ties between India and France, which also we see happening. So all this journey which she has traced will once again be, the drama will replay itself in different ways in earthly life. But we have spoken about it. Also, to me personally, it is very interesting that the mother landed in Dhanushkoti, which is, you know, the place through which Lord Rama went to reclaim, bring back Sita. Though they came together in Pushpak Viman, so they didn't come back this way. So the mother is coming to Dhanushkoti, and now of course that place is gone underwater. So it sounds very interesting. But what I want to read today is something else. She had number of experiences connected with her coming. One of them, for example, as she is sailing on the sea and the ship is carrying her to Pondicherry, she takes this whole boat or the ship in which she is coming as a temple which is afloat on the water. It's a very beautiful prayer of the mother, where she describes it like a floating temple in which she is seated, and it's a magnificent description, and she is praying for all the beings of creation. And then on 28th March, there is another very interesting prayer where she says that she is drawing into that sanctuary, and she can already experience that immense grace, that sanctuary where she is coming. And on 29th March, her prayer is that she entrusts all the beings to the Lord, as if she is prophetically seeing her future role. And then of course when she meets Sri Aurobindo, we see that famous prayer of 30th March, where she is convinced that here is the Lord and His presence is enough, that one day the veil of ignorance will be lifted from earth. And one Sri Aurobindo is enough to counterbalance millions of darkness. And this I find specifically significant in our everyday life. All these things have very profound practical implication. For example, people often complain of darkness, people often complain of difficulties and challenges. So this prayer reminds us that the divine presence is enough to annihilate everything. And this is a thing we have to remember all the time in our life. Everything is everywhere. There is darkness, there is negativity, there is adverse forces, and people talk about how to counter them by this mantra, this Rahu Kalam, this puja and that puja. But these are the simplest of ways. What is everywhere is the divine presence. That's the constant. And if you just remember that, it is enough to counterbalance millions of loads and loads of darkness. And this is there in our scriptures. Mother reminds us of that. So, now she had number of experiences. One of them, which I am going to read today, is later on she speaks of this experience in relation with a question. And she continues with the question, where she ultimately comes to this. People ask, where is the supermind? They want to know about supermind. how to feel it, how to know about it. And she gives an answer. And in that answer, many rahasya, many mysteries she discloses. So that's why to be in the company of mother, people often say, how do I? Well, very simply, be in the company of their books, you will be in the company of the mother. Automatically, you will get transported to that state. And to be in the company of the mother is to unlock not most, all the mysteries of this creation. And yet if you ask that who is the mother, you end up saying she is the mystery of mysteries. She is the supreme mystery. And yet she is the mystery that unlocks all the mysteries of creation. So if you read through the mother's writings, at the end of it, there is nothing which will remain, which will escape or remain as if it is still a mystery. She discloses, unlocks every mystery in this universe. But one has to read it with that seeking state. One is we read it like a newspaper and okay, we read it and forget it. For example, we are aware that when mother was coming to Pondicherry, she experienced Aurobindo's aura. And once a disciple asked, was it 10 miles or 2 nautical miles, etc., etc. But if you read it, there is something else which she is describing there. And that's what is important. That's what we are going to read. People say, when the supramental force manifests, we shall know it quite well. It will be seen, because even the blind shall see. That's how it is said. So when it manifests, we all will see it. That's what people say. And the mother says, not necessarily. At one place she says, only like knows like. So that's why the only way to know the divine definitively is by identification. All else is conceptions. And conceptions are like scaffolding. They're needed at a point of time. Through conceptions we move. And as is our conception, as is our faith, that is the way divine reveals himself to us. So if our conception is that the divine is very cruel, some people believe in the sense that he will punish us, he is testing us, then you will find that at every moment you are being tested and you are going through difficulty, because that is the faith that we have in the divine. If we believe that the divine is very far, very difficult to achieve or realize, then he will be very far and very difficult. Because it's our belief that opens the door. And there is a reason why this belief and faith, etc., are there. But we are not going into that. That's a different story. If we believe that he will be always there for us, always there with us, he will lift us out of any amount of darkness. We can even say, have a very nice, friendly relation with the divine. Well, that's your job description. When I had come to Pondicherry, one of the ladies, very beautifully, she mentioned on a, you know, people's mothers, that kind of relation people have developed. She said, hum kya kare? Hamari prakriti to jo hai, so hai. Tumne banai hai, tum bhukto. You are the one who has made this nature the way it is. So now, we have no choice. You have to take care of it. And it is true. People have had that relation. And at the last point where you go, it doesn't mean that we should do nothing. That's it, taking it in a different way. But whatever you may do, ultimately the mechanisms of nature, why it is there in us, the way it is there in us, is ultimately the operating system. Its final key is with the divine. And Sri Aurobindo never passes the buck to man. He takes ultimately the final buck, goes with the divine. So as is our faith, so the divine reveals himself to us. So if we do not even believe in the possibility of supermind, I'm not even speaking of Sri Aurobindo saying so, even logically one would normally, any sensible person would conclude that if man does not finish himself as a species, evolution is destined to carry us beyond man. This doesn't require any reading. It's logical, because if something has come from dust to man, how is it going to stop with man? It's just impossible, because there is some force, energy, call it whatever, which is evolving forms after forms. Even if you say that this is a mechanical process, nature is doing it, and if you say all is simply a survival of the fittest, then man is not the fittest of all creatures. So Evolution is bound to carry us beyond man through all the challenges. So even if logically, but if we don't admit this possibility, if we say no, it's all a fairy tale for whatever reason, because we want to believe in man's supremacy, so then obviously even if, like with Duryodhan, even when God is present in front of him, he is not able to recognize. He thinks he's a deceitful trickster. So she says that when the supramental force manifests, we shall know it quite well. It will be seen. People say. And then she says, not necessarily. They will not feel it any more than those people of little sensitivity who may pass through this place, even live here, without feeling that the atmosphere is different from elsewhere. So we should understand that it's not about a place, it's about the sensitivity. And you see it in not only here, there are many places. A lot depends on how you are tuned. I still remember going to Chittor and where Mirabai used to live, and that's now in ruins. Not the place where they have made a little temple dedicated to her, but the Kaksha where she used to, the Johar had taken place. And I was filled with so much of her presence. But generally it is like a ruin. So there is a kind of inner contact that we make, and that sensitivity which is required at every level. We'll come to that. Who among you feels it in such a precise way as to be able to affirm it? Now she's asking the students, children who are here. You may feel in your heart, in your thought, that it is not the same. But it is rather vague, isn't it? She's saying it's not an act of belief or faith through which you feel it. There's something you feel it right in the very physical. That's what she is telling us. But to have this precise perception, listen. As I had when I came from Japan, I was on the boat at sea, not expecting anything. It was, of course, busy with the inner life. I was, of course, busy with the inner life, but I was living physically on the boat. So she is describing that experience when she has come here. She is on the boat. When all of a sudden, abruptly, about 2 nautical miles from Pondicherry, the quality, I may even say the physical quality of the atmosphere, of the air, changed so much that I knew we were entering the aura of Sri Aurobindo. It was a physical experience, and I guarantee that whoever has a sufficiently awakened consciousness can feel the same thing. Now many people do experience it. I know of people who came and they came for the first time, and everything was fixed that okay, after a week we have to go. So, and then suddenly after a week, Kavita, she says, I came back after doing pranam at the samadhi and she's crying. I said, what happened? I'm not going from here either. We have got booking done, everything. No, I'm not going from here. Crying and crying, and you know, you can't physically explain this. And I could understand, of course, practical man, I have a leave, I can't just so to take. And I know number of people who feel that very, very physically. I had this when I first time went to the US, and I was sort of like a fish out of water. And people asked me, how are you feeling? Thinking, wow, wonderful, been to US. I said, I'm feeling absolutely famished. So they took me to Udupi. They said, why? I said, I'm missing India. So missing India and US with all those things. So they took me to Udupi restaurant thinking I'm missing Indian food. But how could I describe what I'm missing? And all 7 days, my experience, first visit was that all the windows are as if closed. I'm as if inside a prison, and I couldn't describe this. First visit, you are normally supposed to be excited, you want to go there, see there, and I had no urge to go anywhere, see anything. And actually I didn't see. Once somebody drove me through the street somewhere over Golden Bridge or here, San Francisco, but I had no urge. And then I was asleep in the flight. And this flight was, it was on the other shore, so via Singapore. And from Singapore, I was coming. I was a bit asleep, dozing off. Suddenly, I woke up with the impression that all the windows have opened. A very concrete experience. All the windows have opened. And there was a joy in the heart. And then the pilot announced just a couple of minutes later, now we have passing over Andamans, we have entered the Indian territory. Now, this is an experience which is so concrete and very difficult. And it's a question of sensitivity. I believe, and it's my not just impression, see, people in India have that sensitivity. And that's why we will see when a French journalist had come and written about India, this, that, 100 things. And the mother said, blinded by appearances and prejudice, he has passed by the very in front of the God whom he is looking for. Because he passed by, he came even to Pondicherry and he said, they say India has many gods. I hope they will save India, looking at all the things outside. That time, in that arrogance, that what is India? They worship gods, but look at what's happening in India. Of course, India was in a bad state that time. Of course, India was under foreign domination. All this is true, or just come out of that. And the mother says he was blinded by appearances and prejudices, and this, she says, an illiterate Indian peasant is more knowledgeable about these things than a so-called learned European. And it's truly so true. And you see it all the time. Now, of course, I can say this with a very wide experience of going all over the world. And she's describing it so precisely. And for the ashram, it is so true. So many people, as they enter Pondicherry or even just before that, they start feeling a strange joy. Ah, they have come. So she says that the whole quality changed. But what is required is sufficiently awakened consciousness. So what she is referring here is, if I don't feel it, now that takes us to another level. I don't feel God's presence. It doesn't mean that God doesn't exist. It means I am not sufficiently awakened to feel the presence. Obviously, subtlest of the subtle cannot be felt by the gross senses. It's basic logic. Gross senses have gross limitations. Gross senses see gross physical things. They don't see many things which are the even world of physical matter. So many things our gross senses don't see. And the more we are entrenched in the life of the senses, the less these things, the consciousness becomes more and more gross, thul. It becomes stuck in only a material vision and understanding of things. It looks at life purely physically. And that's why in all yogic disciplines, one of the first things taught is to detach from this deyatmabodh, from this engrossing preoccupation with the life of the senses. Sensory life exists, but to be preoccupied with only the gross physical senses, with things that we see, things that we hear, things that we touch, things that we taste, things that we smell, the more we are entrenched in it, the more gross the senses become. And there was a time, and it we may not understand it now, because modern education is very different. But there was a time when in certain yogis, for instance, Ma Anandamayi Ma, she would not allow a foreigner even to come near and have a darshan. He had to sit far. And her logic was that they are not ready even for this. Mother and Shobindu, out of infinite grace, have changed everything, which is very good. Because the cross consciousness cannot receive that contact. Even the mother speaks about the psychic law which is there in this country. At one place she says it is a lovable country and it is the country which should lead everything. And then the disciple says, yes, I hope God saves it. She says, yes, because this is the hope of the world. That psychic sense which is innately there, which no amount of invasions, no amount of left liberal thought and whatever thought has been able to ultimately destroy it. That's the beauty. So the mother speaks about awakened consciousness. If I am not able to feel it, it means I have to awaken. Right now my consciousness is asleep. and asleep because of the dullness of matter. What makes us sleep? The more we are entrenched in material life, it makes us sleep. Whole day if we are preoccupied with food, outer things, appearances, then he'll be asleep. Why? Because it's nature of matter to sleep. In the sense, what is matter? It's so obscure, dull, inert. That's why the moment you lie, and if you lie upon earth, you are pulled back into that state of inertia. That's the nature of matter. So material life is a life of sleep. And the more we wake up from that by contemplation of the divine, by detaching from outer things and attaching to the divine, the more we become awakened. And the more we become awakened, the more we can feel these things. Then she says, very interesting, like a scientist, I had the contrary experience also. The first time that I went out in a car after many, many years here, when I reached a little beyond the lake, I felt all of a sudden that the atmosphere was changing. Where there had been plenitude, energy, light and force, all that diminished. And she has spoken about it also, that up to a 10 kilometers radius, and she says it extends up to the lake. That's why you see lake is the outermost outpost of the ashram, if you look at it like that. People who have gone there. And then slowly it begins to fade. Now, she explains this, that she's talking only about the physical atmosphere. If you go further, you can feel it in the vital, mental atmosphere. You can feel the mother if you are in contact through the thoughts. And in the inner consciousness, she is everywhere. But she is speaking about the physical atmosphere. It is charged right up to the lake. And the mother has also gone to the lake. So all this area is the Tirtha Kshetra. And then nothing. I was not in a mental or vital consciousness. I was in an absolutely physical consciousness. So she is talking about the physical. Inwardly, everywhere the divine is there. And in everything you can feel it. Well, those who are sensitive in their physical consciousness ought to feel that quite concretely. And I can assure you that the area we call the ashram has a condensation of force which is not at all the same as that of the town and still less that of the countryside. We all know it. And at one place she speaks of this also in conversations with Monada. She says it doesn't matter, even as a visitor, you just come and go around the samadhi. You are touched by some, you're like sprinkling of the supramental force. That's how I put it. She says you cannot help but being touched by it. Like you go to that Niagara waterfall, so you don't actually bathe below, but you are in the ship with all that. But you go near, even at some distance, and you will feel the spray coming onto you. So just going around the samadhi, you receive a supramental spray. And it goes inside. And many people will have their, oh, it was nice. They don't know why it was nice. Because we are not sensitive. But it doesn't matter. The very fact, it's a new kind of kashi they have created. As the mother said, that whoever leaves his body here goes straight to the Shobindu's abode. He doesn't go to the realm of death. I mean, we just can't imagine what kind of, what a special privilege it is just to live and breathe here. So, I ask you, this kind of condensation of force, which gives you quite a special vibration of consciousness, who is there that is really conscious of it? So when Mother says all this, she is asking us that, you know, do you feel it? Do you feel it? Okay, you don't feel it, fine. You must become conscious of it. And she's not saying you should take it as an act of faith. She's saying you must develop to a point where you are able to feel it, feel the difference. Actually, even otherwise, one can feel the difference of atmospheres. One of the things that to feel this place, Shobindo has said that when people come here, they encounter two atmospheres. One is the human atmosphere and one is the divine atmosphere. So if you involve or engage too much with human beings, then you come in contact with the human atmosphere. And human atmosphere is human atmosphere. Even an evolved human atmosphere, a developed human being's atmosphere is a developed human being's atmosphere. But the divine atmosphere is very different. And just imagine going to Sri Aurobindo's room after so many decades, still you feel that concrete presence. So it's a different thing, these two atmospheres. So this sensitivity to atmosphere was at one point very much developed in Indian thought. That's why, you know, you have temples, you have places where you are, you go, you don't go. That's why the burning of the body, dead body, was practiced. Because otherwise, all the little vital entities which come out, they swarm in the atmosphere. And they create a kind of very uneasy atmosphere, restless atmosphere. So that's why the practice of burning the dead body, all this because it was based on a very occult science. It has many practical implications. As somebody who wants to lead a true life, if we keep mixing with all kinds of people in parties, in marriages and other things, if we make it a way of life, then we can forget about spiritual life. I mean, we can say that we can't help it, then it's okay, then for the moment, say no to this. You can either say no to those things or you can say no to this. So, of course, there is a way to do it. There is a way one can remain in a state of equanimity, in a state of remembrance. But if you make it a way of life, then you are mixing in all kinds of atmosphere. So she reminds, also within the house, we can create a beautiful atmosphere. Then we can create our own personal atmosphere simply by a state of constant remembrance. At one place, mother says, I can instantly make a difference, make out the difference between those who have the mantra and those who do not have the mantra. See, instantly I can make out the difference as soon as they come. Because those who have the mantra, they carry around them a kind of different atmosphere than those who do not have the mantra. The mantra, of course, should spring up from within. But even otherwise, practicing a mantra, you pick up from one of the books, still it springs from within, still it makes a difference. So she says, I know even people from outside feel it vaguely. Many among you feel it vaguely. I know even people from outside feel it vaguely. They get an impression. They speak of it. But the precise consciousness, the scientific consciousness which could give you the exact measure of it, who has that? And mother has at some point said some remarkable things about this measure. I was very happily surprised when I had read something. She says, the grace that walks with you is in proportion to the difficulty that you are experiencing in life. And I have often seen before the difficulty is coming, the grace comes to you. It is preparing you. I know the story of one lady here, and she used to go to mother every day, and for some reason the son had to go away for 2 months or 3 months. So when he was very attached to her, and when he came back, she had just left the body. And then he said, now I understand why the circumstances were such that I was literally sent away so that she could be prepared. I had this experience myself during Chomdi's passing. She was very attached to me, and I was also very fond of her, and she's worked in mother's room, been here since 3 years of age. So the day she passed away, she was in Desiree, but I was there in somewhere outside in Oroville, and I got the phone and I drove back, cancelling everything, and we were just driving at like breakneck speed, but she had passed away. So I was feeling very bad, and I was telling Jumurthy, her sister, that, you know, I feel so bad. She said, no, this is how it had to happen. And then she described her own experience in the morning where she actually saw her walking up these steps into Sri Aurobindo's room. So she knew something is going to happen. This was in the morning, and the event took place in the evening, and she says, had you been there, it would have been difficult for her to leave. And so many places you see this, that destiny unfolds in strange ways. And she says, when you have a difficulty, the grace is with you, measure by measure, and she says, gram by gram. She uses literally a term. But we can look at the difficulty or we can look at the grace. Those who look at the difficulty, their life, I mean, the other day I was watching Ramayana, just imagine, everything is foretold that, you know, when Ram will come here, somebody will send him here, then from there he goes somewhere else. So already everything has been arranged. When you look at Ramayana, it's very amazing because he has to deal with an extraordinary challenge. Everything has been arranged. Though he is the divine himself, but he is doing a human leela. So that is how the grace has arranged everything, which we come to recognize much later. So she speaks about that precision. Sometimes I have seen, because of a difficult time, because of a challenging period, people have turned to the divine, even as they have come to this place and new door opens. Who has that? I am not alluding to anyone in particular. Each one can look into himself. And now she says something very amazing. Because people may say, okay, that may apply human buddhi, na? So it will say, okay, that time when mother and Sri Aurobindo were physically present, all that is okay. What about now? Now they have rooted here this supramental force, apart from their own physical bodies being the hub. You cannot imagine, just the presence of Sri Aurobindo's relics creates an atmosphere. Here it's their very physical body in which they have worked out the process of transformation, and the supramental force which is rooted, established here, from where it is spreading far and wide. And mother has said it's most intense here. So she speaks about this. And this condensation here is only a far off reflection of the supramental force. She is saying this in 54 or 55. I don't remember the exact date. So when this supramental force will be installed here definitively, he's using the word installed, because it was there in Mother and Sri Aurobindo. It used to come, go. They were doing the sadhana for everybody. But she says when it is installed here permanently, definitively, how long will it take for people to perceive that it is there? And that it changes everything. Do you understand? And when I say that the mind cannot judge, it is on facts like these that I base myself. The mind is not an instrument of knowledge. It cannot know. That's why she says, any spiritual path, you start with this, that the mind cannot judge spiritual things. It's an act of faith. But this act of faith should not end up with only a belief system. That's why there is yoga. Belief is a religion. But act of faith, you start with that there is something which I don't know, which the mind cannot know. If the mind can know it, it will be inferior to the mind. Again, basic logic. If the senses could see straight away and the mind could know it, that means it is something inferior to the mind and the senses. But if it is superior to the mind and the senses, it cannot know. And then you walk the path. And as you walk, you start having, as the mother says, the closer you come to the divine, the more you live in the immeasurable immensity of the divine grace. Automatically you'll feel everything is grace. Everything is grace. The most so-called seeming disaster is a grace, simply because you are living, coming closer to the divine. A scientist can tell you the proportion of the different components in any particular atmosphere. He analyzes it. But as for this proportion here, who can give it? He can analyze the air and its pollution. For example, there is psychological pollution. Scientists cannot measure it. He cannot say these thoughts, these energies, these feelings are in the atmosphere. He cannot say. Similarly, he cannot say, because he is analyzing physical things. He cannot say that there is this divine presence, divine particles in the atmosphere. There is such a vibration, such a proportion of this, such a proportion of that, such a proportion of the supramental. Put the question to you so that you may ponder over it. So, next time when people ask, where is the supermind? One simple answer is, we right now cannot look beyond the tip of our nose. If we walk the path, we'll begin to become aware of the supermind. The more we walk, the more we'll become aware. Though it is also true, because the supermind is now here and active, more and more, if you look behind the appearances, you'll be able to see the functioning of the supramental force. And I'll give just one example with which I'll stop. People often ask, somebody even wrote to me after this talk on Kalyuga Avatar and Satyuga, there's going to be a mega war, because it's written there, no? That in Kalyuga there will be, like at the end of every yuga, there is a war. So there will be a terrific war. I said, bhai, do world war ho gaye. Second world war, is a war which is beyond human imagination. Mahabharat will look a very decent war in face of the world war, second world war especially. It looked like saints were fighting on both sides. After evening, nobody will fight. They can exchange, they can go this side and that side. What rules? But second world war was no holds barred, and the whole world was literally embroiled. And we should remember, during that war, just as during each war, mega war, world-shaking war, when many things are cleared, we have the divine presence in embodiment. So Ramayana war, we see Lord Rama, Mahabharata war, Shri Krishna. Isn't it interesting that during the Second World War and the First World War, we have Sri Aurobindo, and Sri Aurobindo even said this is the mother's war. He actively fought in that war with his silent occult presence, putting all his force to defeat the armies of Hitler, Stalin and Mussolini. Now people say, but there can be a Third World War, and the mother has assured us that now that the supermind is here, we can be sure that whatever may happen, once he said we should not contemplate these things, whatever will happen now will only hasten the supramental manifestation. Wars there will be, but not wars on a global scale. Already human beings are beginning to speak about it. Though there is a war cry always there in some hearts, but most human hearts are now keen to have unity, keen to have peace. Jai Ma.